You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What's up? Welcome to the Van Flip Podcast. I am your host, Lurk. If this is your first time here, thanks for tuning in. We greatly appreciate you checking us out. If you've been here before, welcome back. If you are listening to us on a platform that you can give us a rating, just go ahead and give us a 5-star, thumbs up, or whatever the highest thing is you can. It definitely helps us out in the algorithm of the podcast world. Visit lambgoat.com to stay up to date on news, releases, and announcements from around the hardcore and metal world. Follow Lambgoat on social media. Give us a like on Facebook. You can follow us on both Instagram and Twitter at Lambgoat. Go follow Van Flip Podcast on Twitter. Tweet us what you think of the show and what the next guest that we should have on. If you are interested in watching the podcast instead of listening to them, all of our episodes are available to watch on Lambgoat's YouTube channel. So subscribe and make sure you get notified when new episodes are released. I would like to take a quick second to thank our Patreon supporters, Dylan and Lachlan, and our newest supporter, Jeff. Thank you for supporting the Van Flip. You guys are awesome. If you would like to become a Patreon supporter, not only would you help improve and grow the show, but you also get early access to episodes, an invite to the private Discord chat, Lambgoat swag, and more. We will even shout you out in the show for as long as you are a supporter. Visit patreon.com/thevanflip for more info. On this episode of the podcast, we sit down with Adam and Mike of the Tennessee band Orthodox.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is stuff. Oh no.
Lambgoat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
Nashville.
Okay, cool. All right, we're back on the blah, blah, blah. Oh.
Sick.
Yeah, that's how we started off usually. All right, back. We're back to the podcast. I'm sitting here with Adam and Mike of the band Orthodox from Memphis, Tennessee.
That's
how are you
wrong.
Guys doing? We just talked about it. Nashville. Damn. I got Memphis on the brain, I guess. I don't know. This is Tennessee in general. How are you all doing today?
Good.
Doing good.
Yeah.
There's always something, dude.
Yeah.
There's always something. So, you guys are technically, but untechnically, a relatively newer band, but you've been playing music for quite some time. Mm-hmm. What were you guys doing prior to Orthodox or prior to what Orthodox became?
I mean, I started Orthodox my senior year of high school. So, musically, this was like the first real thing I had. You know, outside of that, the only real credible band that I was in around that time, I used to play drums in a band called Daisy Head, but that was about it, really. I didn't have anything else beforehand worth mentioning. Just a bunch of, you know, shitty Christian deathcore bands and bad local hardcore bands, so.
Christian deathcore is an interesting subgenre.
Southeast, man. Nashville,
I know.
Christian
music is definitely different than it was when I was a kid. It was like DC Talk and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? I vaguely ventured down that avenue as a youngster, you know what I mean?
Okay.
But then you have other bands like, big bands like August Burns Red is also clearly a Christian band.
Oh, yeah.
But like we have a band, the Impending Doom, coming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're coming, so we're going to try to get them on as well. Spoiler. But anyway.
I would still mosh to an Impending Doom set.
Yeah. It's really going to be it's going to be at like this venue that's mostly Christian artists or whatever, and I've been there before. I saw like Norma Jean way back in the day there.
Oh, yeah.
I think before Corey joined the band, but after Josh, so it was like one of the intermediate singers, but that was a cool little time. Haste the Day was there too. Anyway, moving on.
That was my first heavy show.
Yeah?
Haste the Day.
Is that like one of your influences that you have? Or
No. But it's just first heavy show I went to was like 2007, I think, or so. It was Haste the Day, Scary Kids, Scaring Kids, Drop Dead Gorgeous.
That's his. He's all about that.
Gwen Stacy. And
he's all about it.
You said
my
not
bad.
To tap.
I know, my bad. My bad. I'm going to scoot over a little bit. There's like a, you know, the table's there.
But them and then a band called As Hell Retreats was the opener, and they were a local band at the time, and that was like the first band that ever took me on the road. So
was that like your first forte into like heavy music, just that show, or were you listening to things?
I was listening. And I just never went, and then that show came around, and mom let me go.
Yeah.
Because it was Christian bands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mom, Christian, I swear.
Mom has to be the, you know, you have to be approved to go.
Yeah, she was like, I don't want you thinking this is going to be something you do all the time. And now here I am on a fucking Lamgo podcast.
Yeah, doing it all the time. So what do you guys do in the band?
I'm the singer.
Adam?
This is Adam.
Yep. Mike, drums.
Mike is the drummer. And what were you doing prior to Orthodox? And were you... Because like we said earlier, you were like 2012, 2013, yeah. You kind of started doing the music venture. Were you along for that entire time, or did you come around later?
No. So the band is based out of Nashville, but I'm from Ohio. So I've been in several different bands from Ohio, and I've toured. I don't remember how we met.
I think it was when Expire was doing that house show tour.
Oh, I was in a band.
Oh, no. We met in Columbus.
Okay, Orthodox probably played a venue in Columbus.
I think it was Double Happiness.
Double Happiness, and one of my bands played, or we went.
Like 12.
And the band at the time, we came, it was a band called Head Rush. We were on tour going to some venue, not in Nashville, but Expire was doing the house show. And we stopped. They were playing, and we walked in, and... You gave us a shout out.
I saw you guys walk in. Oh,
and all of us like moshed for a second. People were like, who the fuck are these weirdos? Like, I've never seen these people in my life. And then
you left and went to a really bad show in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. Almost got into a fight with somebody at that show. Later down the road, get a call. Or no, an IG DM. I'm pretty sure.
Slid the DM?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. And it was just asking me to fill in for a tour. It was the...
Blessed by the Burn Tour.
Blessed by the Burn Tour for Left Behind and...
Mercy Blow.
Mercy Blow opened.
Cool.
And that was that.
I get Left Behind and Let Them Suffer mixed up. Left Behind, are they from Georgia?
They're from West Virginia.
Okay.
West Virginia.
Thinking of... I get... There's a bunch of those, you know, all the bands that have
L
similar
bands.
Names, yeah.
Right. So that was... Yeah. I've been touring for a little while, and then we kind of just linked up for... What year was that?
End
of 2017.
Okay.
When you kind of officially joined the fold. Is that before or after?
Well,
that was his first tour. Yeah.
When I joined was...
The following summer.
A week before...
We did another
the headline tour. You're like, hey, do you just want to do this? And I was like, yeah, all right.
So do you currently travel to and fro?
Mm-hmm.
From Ohio?
Yeah. Mm.
How does that work? I mean, we don't really get together unless we're going on a tour.
So. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's about a 6-hour commute.
Does it affect the writing and recording process for that kind of stuff?
Or do you really do like a recording process? But I don't have on this last release. I didn't have a lot of hand in like actually playing. Like he's a drummer,
okay.
So that's easy.
Okay,
so.
So is a lot of it kind of already preconstructed before you get in the studio, or is it like something that maybe where like there's like a rough demo of like guitars and vocals, and you may like have a idea of what the drums may sound like?
Yeah, we do pre-production stuff with our good friend Daniel Colombo, and I write the basic drum parts, like what would usually just like the idea of what would be played in a certain thing, and then leave some of it open
mm-hmm.
for him to put his own taste. And then sometimes, since I don't have to actually play it, I put things that are just kind of mean to put in there, and he just has to deal with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he deals with it though. So yeah,
it's like guitar players writing on Guitar Tab stuff they can't really play or stuff someone else couldn't play, and be like, here you go.
Yep.
Yeah. So you guys, just dropped a new record January sometime?
February 7th.
Okay, so early February. Yeah. Almost a month.
3 weeks today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you want to check that out, never mind, that playlist isn't public, but it's on my personal playlist. I'm making a playlist for, like, top albums of the year.
Oh,
so
damn.
You guys have made the cut, at least, not for the end result, but you're in there in the running, at least.
Yeah.
Got in early. It's a long race.
Yeah, you know, it probably is going to be helpful for you guys too, because I'll listen to it a lot more.
So maybe we'll get sick of it by the end of the year, and we're just off the list.
That's true too. That is true too. Then I was like, delete. But we definitely. Well, we had you guys in the new album playlist. We do a new album playlist every Friday. Okay. It's like today we've uploaded the new ones, and so you guys were on that one too. But I definitely have been checking it out, and I was talking to somebody on Twitter about you guys, one of my followers or just one of the Lamb Goat followers or whatever. But I was like, yeah, man, they sound like such and such. And I was trying to figure out, what I said. I even almost like tried to search for it on Twitter before I got you guys. But I was like, damn.
Probably just said it sounded like shit. It's fine.
No, it's not shit. It wasn't shit. But it was definitely like, the new kind of like style of metalcore, so to speak.
Yeah.
Is so different than when I was.
Oh, it's.
You know what I mean?
Funny being like, oh, they're a metalcore band or they're a metalcore band.
Right.
It's like.
See, I don't
two
know.
Different worlds. Like,
what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, no, they're like this metalcore, yeah. Not this metalcore. Yeah, it's annoying.
The term is completely lost. I mean, when someone says it's metalcore, like, I know right off the bat it's not at this point.
Yeah.
It's not. Especially on Twitter. Like, they love to just say metalcore for anything. Anything that has, like, singing in it, I kind of consider, like, a post-metalcore.
I don't even know what the post part means. I call bands that, but I don't know what it means.
I would assume it means, like, singing.
Yeah?
Like
why is it called post?
Well, because post-hard is after hardcore.
Okay.
After metalcore, right?
I mean, yeah. That's
that
simple enough.
Yeah.
Then what's the... Would pre just be punk, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, then you like punk
we're
music.
We're on the same page, yeah.
Hardcore.
It's all rock and roll. It's,
yeah. That's,
like
I just,
hardcore and metal.
I straight up, when people ask where we are, I'm like, we're a metal band. Because that's what we listen to and it's what
would, okay.
It all draws back to. So.
What would you say you sound like? Not genre wise, but like
so. When somebody asks me,
yeah, like if you had like three bands, you sound like this.
Band are you in? We sound like Slipknot. Everybody knows who that damn band is.
Yeah,
it's like, and you can take, you know, influence. You know, you listen to it, and it's like, okay, yeah, that riff for that part is like super Slipknot or Korn or whatever. But you know, that's just the easy answer for me.
Yeah, I say Slipknot, System of a Down, and Gojira. So
interesting. That's yeah. Weird you say that because I definitely get like, and again, not derogatory in any way, fellas, but I get like a new metal kind of vibe.
Yeah,
which is cool. I grew up on that shit too.
That's
so
what I grew up on.
That's what we're pulling from.
I call it new metalcore. I think
there
the internet calls it new metalcore too.
Yeah.
I was afraid to say it on the microphone, but you know, sure.
That's not a bad thing. I'm actually here for that whole like
hell
revival because. A lot of bands are like that, like Loathe. I mean, these are all albums that came out when you guys...
We literally put the record out the same day as Loathe. Our record's called Let It Take Its Course. Theirs is called I Let It In and It Took Everything. And
yeah.
I had no idea of it coming out. And then it came out and I was like, dang, we like almost said the same thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, theirs is...
Y'all don't sound the same.
No.
But they definitely... You both are definitely like new metal.
It's kind of opposite ends of the same... Collective,
yeah.
But yeah, their records sound
beautiful. I can't believe I don't know what the fuck I was referring to you guys as because it was like dead on in my head. And Loathe, I was like deathcore, Deftones. That's what it sounds like to me. Like
call us the future. It's cool.
Future, yeah, they are the future of music going forward. No, it definitely has like I said, a new metal vibe. And you saying Slipknot and Korn and shit like that. I'm like, yeah, I can totally see that. Your vocals is almost kind of like in the same vein as like Frankie from Imure and shit. So
I haven't heard that one yet.
The style, the way that
you're... Just like the weird going from talk and then it gets intense talk and then it yells. And yeah.
But also you saying Slipknot, it's also kind of like Corey too.
Yeah, we get King A1O a lot too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. Or,
is it A1O?
Yeah, A1O.
Okay. This is your first... LP, right?
Second LP.
Second
yeah.
LP. Okay, so what your first one was itself?
It was called Sounds of Loss.
Sounds of Loss, but did you put it out yourself, or was it?
Came out through Unbeaten. This was our second album with them.
Okay. And when did you guys drop that? Was it a full-length or an EP?
It was full-length in 2017, in May of 2017.
Before you were around?
Correct.
Slightly,
correct.
Like half a year beforehand.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to ask, do you have any writing on this? But yeah, we already kind of went over
that. that one was me and Tyler Williams, who plays bass for Counterparts.
Okay. Now,
he was one of the original touring members of the band, and then Counterparts offered him that position, and I was like,
Duh. Yeah, we had Brendan on a couple months ago.
I bet that was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. He's a cool dude. I mean, I'm half Canadian, he's Canadian, so you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there you go.
Boner
Bunch
brothers.
Of A's.
Yeah. Talking about stuff no one understands. But yeah, that was cool. Another thing that I researched is, and we seem to be having a lot of these types of bands on the podcast recently, but Straight Edge? Are you guys still all Straight Edge?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Where did that kind of start? Or is that just like something you've done since you were younger? Or is it something that you kind of like picked up along the way? Because like, you know, sometimes people have problems and then they're like, I'm going... Clean all the way.
Orthodox, I personally, me, I was always sober just from family experiences. I was just didn't want to touch the stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Orthodox started, and I was like, I want this to be a straight edge band. And Nashville at the time had one other straight edge band called Enough. And so it was kind of like a, you know, Nashville needs more of this. So we started doing that, and it stuck. And then as the years went on, we were like, yeah, let's just, I mean, there's no point in changing it. It's kind of what we knew. We were very, still are very proud of it. So it's kind of like, what's the point of redacting it, you know?
Right.
It, you know, it's just,
yeah,
kind of became a part of, I don't want to say it's part of the image, but I would say it's a part of the name almost.
Yeah, and it's a lot less of the old two EPs, you know what I mean? And it's not like the hard, super hardcore that Orthodox used to be.
Yeah, when we first started out, we wanted to be a faster foundation, basically.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And like then, a preachy kind of situation? Or?
No, just musically. Okay. Just like, it was a lot of really tough riffs with some panic chords mixed in there. Very much like an actual hardcore, like a metallic hardcore band.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And then so that was our first release. Second release started to have like a little bit of like nu metal groove elements here and there, but still very much that same basis. And then when we started writing the LP, Tyler and I both were like, dude, we didn't grow up listening to this music. We started writing like a couple of songs and we were like, man, this is what we want to write. And kind of just made the jump and it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what brought us where we are.
Yeah. I was going to ask, is your lyrical content kind of based within that belief system too? Or is it just like a little bit of everything?
It's more so a lot of the songs we've got are written about experiences that led me to stay the way I am with straight edge, but it's not so much the, like, a blatant straight edge band,
yeah.
You know, like Inclination has that song that says I'm still fucking straight edge. And that's probably one of my favorite songs, but we're not as straightforward about it. So
cool. So do you want to get into your, why you're straight edge?
I mean, it's just simply,
I mean, because we read a couple of things online, so that's
yeah, yeah.
Why, I mean, I kind of have an idea.
There's enough of the stories out there. Okay. I mean, it's literally just, I feel like a lot of people have the similar experience of they grew up watching people they love fall to addiction, mm-hmm. and decided they didn't want to create the same pain for someone else.
Yeah.
And that was that.
Because I also share, I'm not straight edge, not that I have anything against it or anything like that. I was at some point before I was 21, like most, you know, people in the hardcore scene. But, yeah, I mean, I also feel like we kind of have the same kind of somewhat similar experience. A family member of mine also, who is much, much older than I am. I don't know. Very, like, there's a lot of pills being taken and stuff like that. I'm not saying that that is negative or a positive thing, because obviously people say they have this and that.
Yeah.
But,
well, there's a fine line between necessity and abuse.
I also think older people, as far as, like, the older generation, don't really understand that, like, wow, I'm an addict, but I'm still getting this stuff from my doctor. So
yeah.
I think that is just some kind of like mental thing that the older generation has, where they trust everything that the doctors or the news or anything like that is saying. So mm-hmm. yeah, I just feel like I've shared the same sentiment. So I don't, whereas I'm not straight edge, I'm not like doing everything and anything like, yeah, like any kind of like, over the counter, like even just cough syrup or regular ibuprofen or something like that. I rarely ever take ibuprofen, and I don't really take any pills for the most part. I don't take anything like non-natural for the, you know, for the whole thing. So I smoke weed. You know,
yeah,
what
I was about to be like, yeah. Oh, so what you're saying is
I smoke weed.
You want the smoke.
Yeah, no, and
keeps it organic.
Yeah, I'm very vegan in that aspect.
There you
I'm
go.
Vegan drug user.
Plant-based.
Yeah, I'm plant-based.
Drug user.
But yeah, and even then, I was very late to the game on that. I was like probably your age before I even like dabbled in it.
Uh-huh.
So I lived a long time. I grew up in the DARE culture. You know, I was like
yeah.
a young,
oh, yeah.
youngster in the DARE culture. And that really freaked me out. So it is what it is.
Yeah, it did. That, yep. that was what they were trying to do.
Yeah. yeah. But now it's like different. They all want you to take that. You know what I mean? I feel like you're getting pushed a lot. You can see a lot of like commercials, a lot of things that lead down that road. And then.
Yeah.
Then you're on OxyContin for, like, ever. So, you know what I mean? It's like a whole situation, man. Anyway, So the name Orthodox, is it kind of involved with those choices, or?
Yeah, kind of. So a lot of people think it has some sort of religious base just because Orthodox Judaism, Christianity, all that kind of stuff.
Thoughts when I first started,
yeah. It's not that. It's, if you look at the word Orthodox, by definition, without any kind of religious pretext, it simply means a belief that a lot of people claim to know, but few know the true meaning of. And if that's not fucking straight edge, then I don't know what is. So,
yeah. Me and JP were talking because we had Sect on. They played with Magnitude down the street from where I live, actually. And we had Chris from Sect on and everything like that. And then when we went to the show, we noticed it was at a bar, for one. So it was like almost a complete straight edge tour package for the most part. I don't know if the openers or local people were in the same avenue, but we noticed that, like, boom, as soon as the show was done, that place like kind of cleared out, because obviously no one's buying any alcohol or anything like that from the bar, so there's no reason for them to stick around. So we were discussing, like, is it harder for you guys to get booked in venues that are, like, roughly bars? I'm not like you guys. I shouldn't say you guys. I should just say, like, bands that maybe have, like, a more straight-edge following or whatever. Like, does that come into...
I've never had... there's been bars that have named drinks after us. I've never had any... I mean, for the most part, like, our crowd is, you know, 20 to 25 for the most part, I'd say. And... Yeah, I've never even thought of it, so no.
A lot of the people that obviously listen to our music, they're not straight edge.
Yeah, true. And yeah, it's rare we ever go on the road and don't play with other bands, too.
Mm-hmm. Right, so, like the whole bill on this tour that we're on right now.
No.
You know.
Yeah, not straight edge.
There's like...
A couple.
A couple.
There's dudes on the package. Matt and Andrew.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, they're not straight edge bands or anything like that. I don't even think we've had straight edge locals or anything like that. So,
yeah.
I've never had an issue with that in the past with any of the bands I've been in.
I was just curious because, I mean, obviously, like, some tour packages or when a show is booked, there's, like, a split or the bar may charge less for the tour package because they're going to get, like, increased alcohol sales or this, that, or the other. It was just something I thought about on the business end because it's something I never even... you know, thought to myself was an issue.
I feel like it may be even one of those things where if we're coming to a city, I feel like if a promoter knows their shit, chances are they're probably going to try to find somewhere other than a bar to put us.
Right.
Just because of that fact.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever heard of a bar not taking us. I mean, because
bar. I mean, it's like, I mean, but the venue, like, tonight, in those, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh,
well,
yeah.
I mean, it's not the venue that...
99% of the venues that we play are... bars.
Yeah, there's you're going to have hardcore bands, you're probably not making money off the hardcore band, like, realistically.
Yeah, and that's...
like, the bar is what keeps a venue going, unfortunately, but it's...
And that was my rationale for that, because if the venue's not making money, then what's to say that they stop booking those kinds of shows or whatever, and then, you know, it's just something I never really thought about, but it is interesting to kind of discuss with people because it's like one of those things where you don't necessarily want to chastise, you know, that demographic, but yet they don't really benefit. There's no benefit to them being there.
I feel like, but at the same time, if you have a bar, but you're willing to have all ages shows, then you already know what you're doing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
and a lot of bars have that, you know, upcharge for underage.
Yeah. That's
so
another thing.
So they don't lose, you know, profit $10 on heads that walk
if you're
the door.
Of age. 12 to 14 if you're under, something like that.
How often are you guys on the road? Is it like a almost full-time thing for you guys? I mean, now you have the release out, so obviously you're going to be hitting it a little harder, but like prior to the release, like, are you hitting the road a lot?
We would do like 2 to 3 like 40-day tours a year. Mm-hmm. Right now we're on the longest one the band's ever been. This one's like a little over, I think it's like 7 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's, we started on February 6th and we'll be out till March 27th. So I'd say roughly in the ballpark of 100-plus days a year.
Interesting, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you guys have, like, side gigs that you guys obviously do when you're back at the house?
I work at a restaurant back home and then manage some Airbnb properties. Austin, our guitarist, works at two restaurants back home. And then Shiloh, our bassist, is now like a full-time merch guy.
Like Prince merch or?
No, he does merch on the road. He's actually the TM for this tour.
He's full-time on the road.
Yeah, he's on the road.
That is his job now.
A lot.
How does that work? Did he just get a phone call and then he like goes somewhere and meets up with the band and just goes out with them?
It all started because we did a headliner with Spite in 2018. And he just got to know the guys really well. And I think he just told them, hey, I'm interested in getting into this if you ever need somebody. And gave him a call and it worked out. He's great at his job. And, you know, you get in good with a band that sells a lot and they're going to tell their friends who need some help. And the cycle repeats and you get more offers.
Yeah.
So
I always thought it was very weird that started becoming a thing where like they'd have like merch people for same merch guy, but for different bands. Mm-hmm.
It's a career for some people. Yeah. I've got some friends that make like really good money.
I don't know how they would make money, but I don't know.
It's a full-time job out there. I mean, like when you're moving that much product and handling money and, you know, the bands have to do their shit throughout the show and they don't want to, you know, a band like that size doesn't want to fuck with merch. They don't want to do that. They have enough on their plate. They got to, you know, do sound check. They got to warm up. They got to do all this other bullshit, load in, load out. So when you get some guy who's like, hey, I'll handle it. And they're like, well, shit, you know, and then you start getting paid and, you know, making tips and stuff. And you're like, oh, I can do this.
Yeah.
For
it's a job.
Other bands.
Yeah.
Go out and do whatever.
Yeah. It's a thing. I have a buddy of mine who's in the services and he's been in services for like 14 years and he's getting out relatively soon. So he's like wondering what to do and this or the other, not saying he's going to be a tour manager or anything like that. But I was like, man, you haven't hit the job market like, you know, almost 2 decades. I was like, it is completely different out here now. I was like, anything's a job. And it's weird, you know, that all these little jobs pop up and people like make careers off of them. But,
anything is a job.
You know, for the most part, yeah. Because you can get money on the internet for doing anything.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you have a fans only account.
Yeah. It's crazy shit, man. There's always a buyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the content. You just have to have the proper content for anything, not just fans only. Yeah. Well, Dealer's record label manager, or the Franz has.
Are we really going to talk about Franz's OnlyFans account right
now? Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait. He may be at the show tonight. I was talking to him earlier. I can't wait to have him back on. He was the first guy we ever had on the podcast, which was very interesting because, like, I had no idea about him personally, and I only knew about Attila, and you know, I'm not like the biggest fan, unfortunately, but. He was super interesting, and I would love to catch up with him now to talk about his fans-only account or, you know, whatever's happened in the last year for him as well. But that'd be interesting, I think, because he's done some wild-out shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Good content.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's what sells, you know?
If you don't follow him on Twitter, it is crazy sometimes, for sure. but anyway, yeah, he was talking about Dealer last time he was here, and then, you know, lo and behold, they are here now in America, I think, for the first time or something. So
yeah, they're killing it.
Yeah.
They smash. It's a good band.
Yeah, they are.
They just had a record out, too. But let's get back to your record.
Okay.
Is there anything different between this record and the last record? Because obviously, like you were saying, you guys were writing songs, and you were like, hey, you know, let's kind of scratch this whole vibe. And was it like a complete pivot?
I would say, you know, stepping from the old material into Sounds of Loss, which was the first LP, was already a big jump to where we sounded like a hardcore band that really wanted to be a nu metal band. And on this record, we took the risks that we executed on the first one and, you know, instead of just dipping our toes in the water, like actually dove into it. So it's a lot more in the direction that we were interested in. You know, it's a bigger push. It's a progression. That's the best way to put it. It's really the only...
It's just deeper.
Yeah, when I think about the new album following the first is kind of the only direction that made sense. So
it just felt more natural.
Yeah. I think we definitely found a lot of comfort knowing that. Cause I mean, we literally, when we wrote Sounds of Loss, we were like, if this doesn't do well, we'll just break up. Cause I'm tired of grinding for this bullshit. Yeah. No, really. That was, and lo and behold, people liked it. And it kind of caught a second wind at some point. And like that record's, that is the album that opened a lot of doors for us. To the
Sounds of Loss?
Yeah, yes. When people are like, yeah, I didn't really listen to you guys before Sounds of Loss, I'm like, oh, fucking thank God.
Yeah. Like, don't.
Yeah, no, yeah. It, it's, So going forward, it's just we got a lot more, like I said, a lot more comfortable because the risks we took paid off. And so we're kind of like, well, I think people expect us to get even weirder. So let's give the people what they want. And
yeah,
that's where the new.
I knew that door was going to open. I felt it. Okay. Well, thanks, Barrett. My man, that's Barry. The local guy around here.
Oh, yeah. The local guy.
Yeah, he's he kind of runs, not runs it, but he maintains this lovely piece of property.
Talk to Barry.
Barry's the man.
All right. Noted. Don't do. Okay.
Anyway.
Barry is here, in case you.
He's always here.
He's present accounted for.
Yeah, he can make you something out of wood if you want to. But, damn, he ruined my train of thought. Anyway, so when did you get into, like, the hardcore scene? And or when I say hardcore, I mean, like, you know, heavier music or whatever. What were you listening to prior? Like, what are your influences before you got into the band? Mariah Carey?
As in, going all the way back, like, my parents were in the country music industry.
Well, yeah, you guys are, you're in Tennessee. Are you from there?
Nashville, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, so you're indoctrinated.
Yeah, straight up. My dad was head of A&R for Atlantic Records in the early 90s.
That's something that we were looking up. Yep.
He did a lot of stuff with that. My grandfather moved to Nashville, well, I don't know when, way before. I think way before my mom was even born. And, you know, started, you know, establishing himself as a songwriter, or publisher, or producer, all that kind of stuff. And so I grew up in a household that was constantly, I mean, surrounded by country music, even to the point of, like, I would hang out with my dad while he played demos of, like, Tim McGraw's new album. And he's like, oh, we need to fix this and this, like, figuring out mixes. Mm-hmm. So that's what I grew up listening to. And then somewhere down the line, Tony Hawk Pro Skater came out, and
yep.
Everything changed.
Just fucked it all up.
Yep, just pissed my parents. No, but that, I mean.
Were they hoping you'd be a country music star?
I don't think they cared, really. Like, they, obviously, if I learned how to play guitar and sang with a twang, they'd be fine with it. But it was one of those things where my brother and sister, if they hear this, I love you, have really no musical talent. And
zing.
Yeah, my brother's a great, plays harmonica really well, and my sister's gotten pretty good at singing, but younger days, didn't really have really any interest in it. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that I took a musical interest just excited them, so they didn't really, they didn't understand. Like I said earlier, they thought it was definitely a phase type thing.
Devil music.
Yeah, no, like it's cool to have them come to our shows years and years later and see us play, like, sold out shows and things. I'm like, hey, it wasn't just a waste of time. I promise. Like,
I mean, a lot of it was, but
no, there was years where what was I doing? But I think the first time I heard genuinely, like, heavy music that, like, made me like, oh, this is sick, was like the Tony Hawk Pro Skater soundtrack was cool.
There wasn't even that much heavy stuff.
There was, like, Rage Against the Machine, yeah. And, like, there was that Anthrax Public Enemy song, and, like, Goldfinger was on there. And so there was a lot of that. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4 is the first time I heard System of a Down. That changed my life. But before that was Hybrid Theory.
Oh, yeah.
My neighbor played Hybrid Theory in the car with my mom, and I heard about 45 seconds of Paper Cut, and then she turned it off and said it sounded like prison music, and eventually she caved in because she read the lyrics and realized it didn't say fuck a bunch, and and it was on the radio, and the end was like a hit song, so like she was singing along to that. So
right.
Like,
yeah, hey. I think a lot of moms were banging in the end.
Oh yeah,
they love
that. Oh yeah,
they were cranking.
And then Numb came on, Breaking the Habit.
Yeah, to the end.
Oh yeah,
and yeah, I mean that's really what pushed me into heavy music. So
it's crazy. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's. I think the first alternative CD I ever bought was The Young and the Hopeless from Good Charlotte.
Sick. And we're gonna call that alternative? I'm just kidding.
Not.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I mean, I guess technically at the time that was on the radio too. You know,
they're MTV. They're a big MTV
like
band,
girls,
right?
Oh yeah. Girls like. Or boys don't like, girls don't like boys, girls like cars and money. Yeah.
That I, you know,
it was on, that was there.
I feel like, and again, I could just be talking on my ass because I'm whatever, but I remember them being on TRL, and at the time I was like, wow, this is so cool that this kind of music is being like,
yeah,
broadcasted, you know, nationally. But then you know, like even the U's, I always thought there was something weird about the U's, and then like they were like they were working with producer from I think Goldfinger, right?
Yeah, John Feldy does so his like, hand in fucking everything.
Well, obviously, you know, he's producing them, so he's probably making it sound some which way, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of wonder, because Good Charlotte didn't sound like Good Charlotte on MTV when they first started. So, you know, I wonder, like, when did they, like, pivot to that and be like, we're going to do this, and then it became, like, the biggest thing for them and the youth.
Yeah, I mean, the, what's the singer of Good Charlotte's name? I almost said John Madden, but it's not. I think his last name's Madden, though.
Madden,
right?
Yeah. Is it Benji?
I don't know. Singer of Good Charlotte's on like a Goldfinger song.
Yeah.
Like he's on January, I think it's called. But yeah, I mean that was the first like not what my parents listened to album I bought, and then from there I just had to get the lyrics approved through my mom. Yeah, she would read it on the internet was a thing then. She could go on and figure out what they were saying, and then she'd be like, "Oh, you can listen to this." And eventually, I figured out that I could change the names of songs and bands on my iTunes, and that's when I started downloading Slipknot and all that.
Yep.
And
it's DC Talk, Mom. Chill out.
Yeah. Right.
Do you guys? I mean, are you guys? It sounds like you kind of come from a religious background, or
I'm from the Bible Belt, so yeah.
I mean, yes, we're all living here, so yeah. Is that something? Do you carry that with you still?
No.
Okay.
I mean. Believe in higher power, all that kind of stuff, but I don't follow any particular religion by mm-hmm. any means. So,
was it a? Do you think it was a drawback or a positive that? And again, I'm using this as a blanket term that your mom like was kind of sheltering you from music.
I don't think she was necessarily sheltering me from music more so than she was just like. Actually, maybe that is what it is. I don't know. Maybe I'm in a denial. But it didn't hurt because she at least gave me the opportunity to find mm-hmm. certain music. And when I think of sheltering, I think of somebody, oh, they're yelling. You're not going to fucking
listen. Yeah, no, I mean just like
the fact,
checking the lyrics and stuff like that.
She was just making sure that it wasn't going to be a negative influence. And I don't, yeah, maybe that helped me out.
I think that was just like a lot of parents back in the day, like, oh, you know, the parental advisory sticker on there.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, you got to get the censored version and you can have it.
Yeah. Walmart only.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom did that when I was growing up until I was like 11. Then she's like, all right, fuck it. Like, it's cool. Like,
yeah,
you're fine.
The weird part for me is like my parents were younger too. They were like 22, 23 when I was born. So by the time I was like of age to kind of like start feeling the world out myself, they were like 30. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'd have a 13-year-old if I was born the same time my dad was, and I can't even fathom that because I have no kids. So, but I don't think I was ever really, like, watched closely as far as, like, what I was intaking as far as, like, TV or music goes.
Yeah.
I always thought that was cool. But I also got exposed to a bunch of weird internet shit at a young age when, like, my dad didn't have a filter on the computer or anything. And we never did, but, geez, if he knew what I was fucking, like, stumbling upon.
Now you work at Lambo.
Oh, yeah.
Look what happened.
Yeah.
Goddamn.
Nothing phases me now. But, yeah, no, one of the first, like, CDs I got was, like, Doggy Styles from Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
Know?
Fuck, so,
man, yeah, no baby that's, steps there.
That's sick, dude.
Fuck. At 10, age 10 to 11, I was already thugging
it out.
Did
you ever ask what it meant? Did you just assume it was like, oh, it's Snoop Doggy Style? Or
I didn't.
What is this?
I never really picked up on, like, the title, no, but like when they were talking about like smoking Indo, sipping on gin and juice, in my head I'm like, I know Indo is probably some kind of drug, and now I fully know what it is. Obviously, like,
yeah.
I was like gin and juice. I was like juice. Yeah. I'm like, what kind of juice?
What kind of juice is juice? What is?
Why is he saying about juice?
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't know what gin was or anything. Murder was the case. All that weird shit. But yeah. So did you guys like obviously came up in the new metal? Like you were new metal guys, and then you transferred over to kind of like. More or less scene music?
Yeah, I think...
Do you think a lot of people do that?
It's one of those things where when I think of, like, new metal shows, I definitely don't think of younger people being there.
No.
Right.
And so I feel like it's one of those things where, especially at that time, new metal was a big enough genre that they could afford to play venues that are 21+, 18+, and so on and so forth. And the main reason I heard about shows was because of my friends at school, and there was a venue... in Nashville that I think they have one in Florida called Rocket Town. And
I know
it's a Michael W. Smith founded or whatever. And they had a skate park in Nashville called Sixth Ave. And I would go skate there all the time.
Is it incorporated together, right? Or they're close by each other?
It's the same building. They own it.
So I remember hearing about it like 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, oh, it used to be the biggest venue for alternative music in Nashville. If there was a show worth going to, it was probably a Rocket Town. Mm-hmm. And so I heard a lot about shows through that and starting to go to shows there and being there all the time. I really connected with the staff there, became friends with them. And that's where all the shows that I heard about were at. So the new metal stuff, I mean, I didn't see Korn until last fall. For the first time.
Well, I've never seen them either, and that's what. That's on the list.
Yeah, but, that's one of the things where, not only that, but I don't think that some of my favorite bands didn't really come to Nashville, too.
Yeah, it's a weird vibe.
Nashville's a hard sell because it is Music City. You can go door to door to door and see insane musical talent everywhere. So it's kind of a hard sell because we're spoiled. There's something to see every night. So I feel like for a genre like that, especially that was the time that country music was really starting to become a pop thing.
Right.
And so it was an even harder sell. And because of the venues that were around, I don't think there was really anything for them to go to. So, yeah, I think the reason I was always a nu metal fan, but I didn't ever see any of it because the only thing that was easily available to a kid who had to get a ride from his parents was Rocket Town.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, I'd say that's probably what really pushed me into that was I enjoyed it being heavy. I enjoyed the energy and it was what was there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what did it.
It was one of the, cause I mean, I came from just listening to the radio, you know what I mean? Or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, the internet, I had the internet for a little while, AOL type shit. And then we'd get high speed internet shortly after that.
Yeah.
And then I started to find my own music, and again, unfiltered internet, I was going all over the place. So I found new metal type bands, and I started gravitating more towards that. Obviously, we had Limp Bizkit here.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, you did.
Yeah, that's one of my guiltiest pleasures of all time.
No, fuck that. Not guilty.
Not guilty.
You know what's weird about that? I was going to bring this up, too. I was trying to find a place to do that. I'm so glad that I don't know what's going on, what the change was. It's probably the internet and just internet shaming people and making people more conscious, I guess, more woke in general. But I'm all about, I was saying earlier, the nu metal revival in hardcore because I grew up on nu metal. But at the time when I transitioned from nu metal, Korn, Slipknot, Linkin Park, all that shit.
Oh, dude, you definitely didn't tell anybody about it.
No. You weren't saying
you could say Linkin Park. You
not even. Really? Slipknot was barely one that you could kind of have a shirt at a hardcore show or something like that. And you could be why are you wearing a Slipknot shirt?
I had friends who didn't know that Slipknot yelled in their songs. He was wait, they don't just sing the whole time? I'm no, it's not fucking Disturbed. It's crazy.
But I'm glad now that, because even the genre itself, nu metal, is becoming a big thing again. There's a revival of that, not just within the hardcore scene, but everything's so much more accepted now.
Yeah.
And so you can everything publicly and out you normally would. But I left nu metal behind because it wasn't just cool with the kids that I was hanging with or the scene that I was with. So it's pretty cool that that's a thing now.
I think a lot of that has to do with the older, and I could be completely wrong with this, but the way that I perceived it is that the older half of the hardcore scene clowned on this stuff. Yeah. So the younger half to be able to go to the shows where the older half
to fit in
was keeping, holding it over, had to adapt.
Yeah, and now cool t-shirts, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And now that the younger generation is becoming the older half of it, they're fuck it, what you .
Well, and I think a lot of I'm older, but I'm not part of the older elitist group. I grew up in fucking nu metal, so I'm here for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Bro, one of the best bad bands in the world is Mushroom Head.
Oh, I see. I'm not into that.
This dude, I swear, almost every night drive, I'll be in the front seat, like kind of drifting off, and I hear some kind of eminence. Just like, I'm like, oh, well, here we go.
Dude, I'm from Ohio, man. It's,
I always felt
it's
like,
real, man.
Because I was into Slipknot, you know what I mean? And then I was like, who's this other who's band with fucking masks?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
who are these guys biting the style? And you're like, oh, these are fucking losers from Ohio. But yeah, I've always liked that band. I don't give a fuck.
I straight up, because I remember when they came out, I was like, not going to be around for long. And then here we are.
And here they are still
right, doing this. Let's be real. I think they've been around for a little too long at this point.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if any of them will hear me, but like.
Hang it up.
Hey.
Hang it. I mean, yeah, hang it up unless you want to let us play.
Yeah, hang it up or take us on tour.
Yeah, one of the two. Yeah. You can't have it in between.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's your ideal tour package?
Like, dream tour package or realistic?
Both.
Give me
the realistic first. Give me the realistic first.
I just want to tour with Every Time I Die.
Okay.
I don't give a fuck who else is on the tour. Every Time I Die is on it. Catch me backstage, front row, in the pit. I don't care. I just want to tour with Every Time I Die. That's like
that.
In this realm of heavy music, favorite band.
Is that you too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've talked about this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and those dudes, I mean, I've been watching them rips. For fucking ever. Like, yeah. Since fucking Jimmy Tango's Method.
Oh,
shit.
Man. I mean, there's...
They don't make a bad album.
Exactly. That's even the biggest bands in the world, there's an album where people are like, oh, I don't really fuck with that. If you don't fuck with a certain Every Time I Die record, it just means you're wrong.
I probably didn't fuck with it, probably because, like, if I didn't fuck with an album that they came out, it's more so going to be in their later into their discography.
You're still wrong.
And only because I just didn't listen to it.
Okay. Well,
you know
that's
what I mean? So once you start
ignorance.
Listening to it, you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I will
these
say,
three songs, and then you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
These six, seven, eight, and then you're like, I like the whole thing.
Every Time I Die is a weird enough band that, I mean, I've got them fucking tattooed on my arm,
yeah.
But like every new record, I go through it and I'm like, man, I don't know. Then I go through it again. I'm like, okay, maybe. And by like the fourth time through, I'm like, this is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that just every new record they reach for some new star and somehow grab it. And it just takes you a minute to realize what they're grabbing at. But the moment it's recognized, you're like, wow, this is like, I don't even know what number was low teens is eight. The eight LP,
yeah, some
they're eight LPs deep,
like that.
And that's my favorite Every Time I Die record.
Is it?
I mean, it just.
I think that's the best record that band.
I mean, New Junk Aesthetic probably the one that I've attached to the most. But every new record they put out, I'm like, I don't. It sucks because I don't want to listen to anything before this now. Like, they just keep getting better and better.
Yeah.
So that's the most realistically. Every Time I Die would be top of the list for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, some of it's nostalgia for me, but Hot Damn. Hot Damn's the one for me.
They're about to do a, what?
20-year or 50-year.
They might have already.
45-year anniversary
like
of that.
Show.
They did a couple shows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that.
So give me the dream package.
Again, one band, System of a Down. Yeah. System of a Down.
That may
favorite
take a while.
Band. Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah, but that's.
I mean, my top three would be. I don't think I could choose, but Korn, Slipknot, Gojira. I mean, those bands.
You guys could technically get with Gojira.
Massive. I don't know, man. That band is.
They're pretty.
That is one of
big.
The biggest current, like, active this generation bands that.
They're one of those bands that's still on the build. They're huge, and they're still getting bigger.
Yeah, that band is one of the heaviest bands I've ever seen in my life. Like, I saw. They play the same day as. One of my favorite bands, Lamb of God, at Sonic Temple in Columbus, and I was like, this is the heaviest band of the whole.
To say that
of the
you
whole
see
weekend.
Lamb of God and then Gojira's heavier is a
right, and I've seen Lamb
testament.
Of God a lot of times, and I've seen Gojira a few, and it's just like they smoke all these other big-ass metal bands right now.
It's just
the one
force.
Band that can keep up is Meshuggah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a different
story. I would throw them in the mix, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen Gojira live. That's
I haven't seen them live yet either. I've watched countless videos.
You need to catch them. Like, it's fucked up.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to... we're actually running a lot later than I thought we would. But that's a good thing, guys.
This happens every time I do a podcast.
Natural conversation.
Goes,
just, you know,
way too long.
We're over the allotted time that I was thinking. But let's get to these... We'll do these, like, really quick answers. You don't have to, like, elaborate too much on them. But these are the ones from the Instagram. All right, this one is, you'll know it, but we don't have a guitar player here. Six strings, seven strings, or eight strings?
Nine.
Nine.
Preferably nine?
Nine.
Nice. Dual stock, you know, dual stock.
Yeah.
Sick. Do you guys know who Galatizia is?
Can you...
G-A-L-A-T-Z-I-A.
No.
No.
Should we?
As in a band? Or a
person? We should
person
just put that
or...
out there in the universe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If you're Galatizia, slide in our DMs.
No. Sorry about that. Yeah, yeah, we don't know. Still straight edge. We've already established
still
that.
Still
straight
edge.
White or brown gravy?
If it's well seasoned, I can do white, but brown's my ticket usually.
You can put brown gravy on biscuits?
Yeah.
Oh,
really?
On biscuits? Excuse me? No.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I could do both, but I'm just saying brown gravy tastes good.
They're out there.
Doesn't matter.
Favorite music to listen to while on tour outside of Mushroom Head every night?
Ooh. For me, not heavy music.
Straight up. You love the goddamn jam rock.
Dude.
You listen to a song that takes us
over to like a fish guy?
Dude, Elder. Brother Hawk. Brother Hawk, they're from Atlanta, I think. So, if you haven't listened to Brother Hawk, do that.
I love D'Angelo and Daniel Caesar and then pop artists like Lord.
Okay.
So
like R&B
and pop, yeah.
That's so crazy when, you know, you get in the nitty-gritty with these guys, with bands in general.
Oh, our bassist is a K-pop,
J-pop
connoisseur.
I don't understand it, dude.
I didn't.
It's crazy.
It's
and
our,
if
like
you go on Twitter,
tour.
On Twitter, it's fucking nuts.
It's incredible.
K-pop people. It's fucking crazy.
I didn't get it because he doesn't speak the language. But, like, I didn't get it at first because when you don't listen to it for, like, the musical content, it just sounds like somebody's just blaring a busy city in your ears.
Yeah.
But, like, as I've started listening, I'm like, the musicians that play that shit, whole different level.
Yeah.
It is insane.
A lot of that stuff that comes out, I mean, it's kind of like anime-ish music to me, and I remember I'm not a big
anime fan.
But like it reminds me of that. But also, you know, what's weird about music that comes from that side of the world, like baby metal and all the other kind of artists that are just like huge that come out of Japan or whatever, Korea. I'm like, man, this stuff is like, and I could be completely wrong, but to me it seems like super produced. Like that's... Like baby metal,
to my knowledge, they are artists, and I could be wrong in this. This is just what Shiloh has told me, is that a lot of artists are literally hired for their voice by corporations that then write their music for
them. Right.
So
it is exactly
a production.
And the
video
production,
the face of the production.
Have you watched like those
videos? Yeah, I mean, everything, and not K-pop wise, but like bands like baby metal and stuff like that. When that first came out, I was like, something's fucking strange about that. And I was like, I don't see, like, and again, I could be, there's, like, are there dudes in the band? They have, like, metal dudes in the band, right? Or are they just all women?
I don't know much about them.
I don't know much about them.
I could be wrong.
I think that the musicians might be,
dudes.
I think they're masked.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah. I felt like, because they're fronted by at least one or more women. I haven't watched
I think
forever,
it's three girls that do it.
But I'm like, there's no way that they're, like.
We're going to be a metal band.
Yeah, write metal music in their house or in their place or anything like that. So, all right. Well, like I was saying, we're running longer than I thought. So, we'll just wrap it up here. Check out your new album, obviously. Fuck, I'm blanking on the title.
Let it Take Its Course.
Let It Take Its Course. That just came out. You guys have vinyl for sale. You guys have all this other stuff.
At the table, please buy it.
Please, for the love of God, buy a record. Shit.
Please buy it. Stream it.
Yeah.
Tell grandma.
Do you want to do like Justin Bieber and just tell everyone to stream it on very low for like days and days and days?
Does he do
that's what he did for his new record, yeah.
Oh
wow, that's...
He got a lot of flack for that, and he still didn't make number one.
Whatever.
Well, we're close to number one, so if you guys could give us that extra bump.
Little boost. We're number three-ish.
We're great.
Yeah.
Just try it.
But yeah, anything...
we swear.
Any last kind of like shout-out words or any like, you know... little nuggets you want to drop on the audience to better help you guys gain fans or just seem cool?
Oh, seem cool. Jeez.
You have
what
to
you
seem
got?
Cool.
Stop trying to seem cool.
Yeah.
That's what I'll say. Listen to our band because we're not cool.
And
it'll be cool if you listen to it.
That was way deeper than I thought we were going to get.
That's all right.
I'm not following that. I don't care. I'm not scared of
these people listening to this.
So. We're all fucking idiots. You're one too.
Hit the comment section for the trolling.
Yeah.
Jeez.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on. And, yeah, check out Orthodox. They're on tour currently now with Spite and Burials and a couple other bands. Dealer, I am.
I am. And Dealer.
And, is that just your... Are you on that tour with just those three? Or
oh, no, we're just making sure you say I am.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fucking rules.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Unity from Texas, they were on the tour.
And they
Unity TX.
Yeah, they were a relatively kind of
headline
of
rap.
Listen to that band as well.
Too long.
All right, you heard it here first. Listen to all of them. And I thank you guys for joining us. Once again, Adam and Mike. So we'll catch you around later. Later. We'll catch you around later.
We'll get there.
Later.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMNS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
We're going to be like Chicago's. Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMNS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.